You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this? And we're live. Welcome everybody here to the Lakers Lounge podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin of Lakers Daily, joined by my good old buddy, somebody who, like, we have been talking about basketball, Adam, for like a third of my life, I think, at this point, like a good ass chunk of it, maybe closer to a quarter. We're getting old.
We've also, to your point, we've been at this for a long time. You know it? Like, think about it. I think I'm in year nine. Next year will be 10. 10 years, that's a quarter of my life.
Yeah, that's, yeah, we started basically at the same time. I don't even know how we met. It must have been through Locked On. But I feel like it was something before that because we both talked to each other about Locked On when it was launching, right? I almost specifically remember talking, hey, did this David Locke guy reach out to you about this network thing? And I think we talked about it. I also remember, and I always bring this up, I also specifically remember while we were recording Locked On NBA together, after one of the shows, you were like, hey, somebody approached me with this project idea, this DNVR thing. I'm thinking about diving in. And here we are a few years later, and DNVR and All City as a brand is doing some incredibly cool stuff. One of those really, really cool things is the All-NBA show that you do with Tim Legler. It's been a blast, man. Like you said, we've been doing this for a while, and it's been a blast to watch you grow, watch all your stuff grow. And I always appreciate you hopping on and talking with me, even if you're going to piss me off during this conversation.
I don't know how much I'll piss you off, because you have a thick skin and a good sense of humor. But your audience, I'm sure, in some capacity will end. I think every year we do the show, and then every year your audience gets pissed at me. And I just say things like, I think the Nuggets are better than the Lakers and they win and everybody's still mad.
Well, you know, it's the way you say it. It's
I'm going to be like such a, like a therapist today. And any takes that might offend, I'm going to say I'm so soft and gentle. Like, you know,
okay. I appreciate it.
Sit down for this, but you know,
I'm going to sit down. I have a cot in my office. I'm going to go and lie down on my cot while we have this conversation. But no, we are talking today, obviously, because the Lakers and Nuggets are getting ready to face off again, right? Third time in what, 4 years that they've played in the playoffs.
It's interesting, right? That you view it that way. That's really interesting, because I view it as they're meeting, you know, for the, like, the second time. They met last year, but it is funny.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to count the time that the Lakers beat them.
Well, I just because it was in the bubble, you know, like it was in Orlando. So it's like a weird one. No, in all seriousness, though, the bubble year to me feels like a year. And I'm not trying to be cute about the Lakers on this. I'm just saying in terms of like time, it's almost like BC and AD, you know, and then that year is like year zero, like it didn't matter or something. So when you lump it together, I'm almost like, oh, that's right. That is part of this extended era, even though it feels like a completely different time in the universe.
Yeah, like before Lakers fans jump down your throat for like even sounding like it's an asterisk thing, I actually agree. There was so much else going on that it's hard for me to remember sports stuff. Yeah. You know, like it was like, you know, the world was in such a different place that I'm just like, yeah, the Lakers won that championship there. And I will contend that it's one of the tougher championships won by a team because of everything that was going on at that time. But even still, I'll acknowledge that it was such a weird time in society, in the world, that it's like, oh, yeah, that's right. The Lakers played the Nuggets. You know, and I look back and I find details of that stuff. It is kind of a moment to kind of wake you up there, because this is the third time that these teams are playing against each other, this time earlier in the playoffs than they've met previously. And this time, you know, again, with the Nuggets being prohibitive favorites against the Lakers, the Lakers have the longest odds in this series than anybody in the playoffs. And
is that
and
true? Even,
I think so. Like, well, we haven't seen
Boston. Boston's yet. Odds will be ridiculous.
It's a bit of of a semantics trick there. But as it stands right now, the Lakers, I think, are still +330. If they
pull because there's a 2-7 matchup and the 2-1-8 matchups have not been out yet, so it is a bit semantic to say they have the longest odds. They also are the biggest gap between seeds.
Well, do you think OKC would be greater favorites than the Nuggets?
Yeah, I think so. I think more likely, yeah. I mean, just because they're playing two shorthanded teams, whether it's New Orleans or Sacramento, that's the only reason.
Yeah, I wish Zion was available and healthy. I think the Pelicans would really give the Thunder issues with their size up front. But no, let's talk about this series, though. And the way that I want to go about this is in the time that has passed between the Nuggets sweeping the Lakers last year and now playing them again this year.
Somebody told me to relax. I look too serious. So I'm trying to,
I thought you were fondly remembering me.
No. Trying to look relaxed.
No, you do always have, I was actually thinking about this. You do have like a listening face. Like you do have like a, wow. Yeah. You're like, you know, that's a good point. That's it. Yeah.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
But a lot, I think, has changed in that time that the Lakers, in that time that's passed between last year and this year. Bruce Brown, not a Nugget anymore. LeBron and AD say that they are healthier going into the series than they were the last time the two teams played. And the Nuggets, I guess, also don't have Jeff Green. The Lakers are finally starting Rui right at the beginning of the series compared to last year when it took game four. It wasn't until game four that he started in that one. There was also some kind of weird circumstances in the matchups that these two teams had throughout the season. Right.
Wait. What were the circumstances? I didn't know this.
Well, no. I mean, there was like a back-to-back in there at one point.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
And then there was, the Lakers were like Darvin Ham decided it wasn't a good idea to play his best players. And
so here's what's funny about this, Anthony, doing a crossover pod. Cause you know, we're all in our own little like worlds Bubbles. Where you're hyper focused on Lakers. I'm hyper focused on Denver and so on and so forth in Nuggets world. Just so you know, in Nuggets world, the three games this year were Banner Night, Kobe Statue Night, LeBron 40,000 point night. They were all marquee Lakers nights. Mm-hmm. And, you know, of course, Denver went 3-0 on those. So that's the story of Denver. So it is funny to hear that with Lakers, it was like funny circumstances was the through line.
For lack of a better term, You know, yeah. The point of all of this is to ask you, like, of those swing factors, right, of those variables that are going to be different in this series than the last series that these two teams faced off against each other, like, rank them and how much do they matter, I guess, will be what we come back to after all of this. But, like, if I had to tell you LeBron and AD being healthy, no Bruce Brown, no Jeff Green, you know, the Lakers having a couple more playoff proven guys, like, Where would you rank those factors here?
I think they're all on Denver's side, honestly. I think they are Bruce Brown, probably first and foremost. He was great in that series. I mean, everybody remembers him being great in the playoffs last year. It was really that series where I think he was most incredible. Impactful. And I think it was honestly a matchup thing. Like, one, I think he had a deep hatred of D'Angelo Russell. I don't know what the backstory is there, but I think he had a personal vendetta against D'Angelo Russell that elevated him to these new heights. And it wasn't even like, I think Denver statistically, and it's not everything, but statistically Denver has been better this year in the non-Jokic minutes than they were last year. So you think, I don't want to just say they're better, like they've replaced Bruce Brown and gotten better, but they have survived those minutes meaningfully better this year, and their defense is meaningfully better than it was last year. And the reason for that, in my opinion, is Christian Brown is a defensive specialist. He is now no longer a rookie. He's a second-year player. And they've added Peyton Watson, who is basically a redshirt rookie, but he's a monster on defense. He's a Jaden McDaniels role. He's just a really impactful guy. So they have more horses, so to speak. But Bruce Brown, it wasn't even his defense that was good, because I think Denver's going to have the same level of defense against the Lakers this year. But I think it's the offense. He was such an aggressive. He handled the ball, which is something Christian Brown and Peyton Watson don't necessarily do at a high level. But they attacked him every time. And you can hide him. Like, Murray can attack him. And, you know, that's a mismatch for Jamal Murray going up against D'Angelo Russell attacking him. But that's one guy. KCP, Christian Brown, Peyton Watson. Who's going to be able to attack D'Angelo Russell now if it's not Murray and it's not Jokic? And that's the thing, is last year it was Bruce and he did an A++ job at it. And this year, you take that away, how big of an impact does that make? Does it allow D'Angelo Russell to have a larger positive impact on the series? If that's the case, I do think it's a different series. But last year, it was the case that he was an absolute anchor on the Lakers, and the Nuggets were prepared to exploit it.
It's why in the offseason, I was so thrilled about the idea that the Lakers might be able to add Bruce Brown. Because you take Bruce Brown playing the way that he did in that series off of Denver and add him to the Lakers, not saying that he would definitely play that way. That's probably the best basketball Bruce Brown will ever play in his life. Like, he was incredible.
You can say that though of almost anybody that plays with Jokic. I mean, LeBron had this for a long time, right? Where you're like, wow, Mo Williams is an all-star all of a sudden. Like, that's the thing. I don't think he would have been the same player even on this LA team, or obviously he wasn't that in Indiana, but he was that in Denver and specifically in that series.
Yeah.
In that matchup.
The other factor that I wanted to talk about was actually Brown and Watson, right? Christian Brown, that is. In that, you know, last year, like, the way that I would kind of put it with Bruce Brown is that, you know, if MPJ was kind of struggling defensively, he was your safety net there. If Christian Brown was you know, looked like a rookie, which he did at times in that series, Bruce Brown was there. And so on and so forth, right? And in this case, there is no safety net there. And there's a tweet on my account somewhere, if I could find it, where I said, Peyton Watson's going to extend this freaking window, isn't he? I was so pissed.
I remember it.
And I've been really impressed by Watson. And I think Brown struggled in his role early, but I think kind of started to figure things out a little bit later in the season, or as the season went along. But, you know, what do you think about the idea of those guys not having that safety net here? And what does that mean for Denver if they can't figure things out?
Well, two things. And the first one is that I think Christian Brown's struggles early on were more about Denver trying to see what he's capable of. Mm-hmm. You know, they played him at point guard basically. And it's like, all right, we're going to expand your wing. Like, we're going to let you spread your wings, try to score a little bit more. And, you know, you find out, okay, he's pretty far away from doing that. When he slotted back into basically a 3-and-D role or a slasher and D role, he started to look like he did last year, you know, an impact player in a more limited role. The second part of that is, I believe he only missed one game in the playoffs last year, only got a DNP CD in one game last year, and that was game 4 of the Lakers series. He did not play. Denver decided to reduce the rotation to 7, and they went with it. That's meaningful Because while I don't know that it's necessarily like it's because it wasn't a series for him, it might have just been it's a closeout game and we're putting everything into it. We feel like we could put him away tonight or whatever.
Yeah.
But I am curious. It didn't happen in any other series. You know, he played in every other one. So I am curious if there is something that I don't recall or that I did not observe about what it was that, you know, if there's something about this matchup that is limiting to him. I don't suspect that is the case, but it is worth noting that he missed a game last year, game four. I think that Peyton Watson and Christian Brown are capable playoffs. There's you have to be able to make plays and not make mistakes. They can make plays. The question is, can they not make mistakes? I think with Christian, the answer is yes. I think that he is now as a second year player, his floor is high because he's not a mistake prone player. Peyton Watson is different. His peaks are way higher. He makes it unbelievable. He had a game with six blocks just a couple games back as a guard, you know, as basically as a wing. But he is a guy that going up against a LeBron, getting into a play, he did not play in the playoffs last year, getting into the playoffs. Now it's about, did you miss an assignment? The margins are so thin that you just want to make a team work every single time. You want to make the Lakers earn their points every time. Two mistakes in one game, that's 4 points that you just gave them because now it was easy and you messed up. Those are the things that I don't know. I think he might be, I think he's probably ready for it, but I would not be surprised if in the series there was a moment where Peyton Watson makes an egregious error that cost the team 4 points.
What are Denver's options if Watson isn't quite ready to play the role that he needs to?
Justin Holiday would be the next guy in line. And I know people are going to laugh and say Justin Holiday, like, you know, that guy, we haven't heard from him for a while. I actually think he is solid. One of the nice things about having Murray and Jokic is everybody's role becomes pretty simple. You're going to be in the corner. Yeah. You need to hit threes. And defensively, you need to use your length. He's really long. And just not make mistakes, you know, make guys go through you and what have you. And I think he's capable of that role, you know, again, in the type of situation you're talking about. Peyton Watson's having an off night, making some mistakes, and you swap him out. If Denver were to rely on him for the entire series, I think it would be a problem.
Kind of changing course here a little bit. We talked about the guys kind of lower in the rankings of importance, right? At the end of the day, like the reason it was a sweep last year is because Jokic was the best player in the series and Jamal Murray was the second best player in the series, right?
I think LeBron was the second best player in that series. I actually went as far as to say that I think LeBron was the best player Denver went up against in the playoffs.
And that game four was incredible.
And honestly, all of it was incredible.
Everything he had. Yeah.
I think it was one of those things where it was a more heroic effort than you will realize because they lost every game and they lost because they were outclassed. But he was really good. And in the moments when he took on the Jokic assignment, especially in game four, it was he did the best job of anyone. What we found out is he only had about 24 minutes of that in him.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably true this year as well.
Let's say though that Murray doesn't so far outstrip AD, because AD was actually pretty disappointing in that series to me. I know Lakers fans are going to point to like the 30 or whatever points that he scored in game one,
40
and some, that he scored there and some of his other efforts and stuff like that. But Murray was incredible. Like the shots that he was making and like his rising to the moment consistently in the playoffs, it's actually kind of perfect that he hasn't made an all-star team and then is just such a badass in the playoffs. But like if AD is able to leapfrog Jamal Murray in this one and you have Jokic, LeBron, AD, Murray as the ranking of the top four guys there, do you think Denver has enough depth there to elsewhere across the roster to make up for the advantage that they didn't necessarily have or that they did have last year in a big way, given the way that Murray played and outplayed AD?
No, but I think it's a little bit of a misleading question. And here's why. I think that with the Lakers, for example, the LeBron AD combo is a big part of it, but it's not all of it, right? Like you can have a LeBron doing other stuff and involving other players and getting them the ball. With Denver, the Jokic-Murray two-man game really is the core of what they are. So for one of them to have an off night or an off series, it's different. It disrupts things. This is why Denver, like you take one of the pieces out, you take Murray or Jokic out, and they lower so much. Mm-hmm. The reason for that is not because the other guys aren't good. It's because the team is designed to be built around that engine. So everything else kind of steps out of the lane. So I say that to say, Murray could be the fourth best player in this series, but still be very good because the Murray Jokic two-man game, and then, okay, Aaron Gordon and everybody else, Denver has the next four best players in the series all playing off that or what have you, and they could win. But it's weird to think of it that way. If Murray and Jokic are playing well, they're both playing well. It's working for both of them. I don't think there's a scenario where it's like the two-man game's working, but Murray's off. That just, it doesn't really work that way. If the two-man game's working, everybody's eating.
Yeah. How is Murray doing physically? Like he missed a bunch of time this year for a couple of reasons or whatever. And I saw Mike Malone talk about, you know, we're just happy he said that they did a good job getting him through the regular season and to have him as healthy as he can be here in the spot. Like, where's he at?
I mean, that's a good question. I think he's good. The team has projected that he is good to go. He rolled his ankle in the final game, actually, a slight roll. It didn't look too bad. He stayed in the game. But it's one of those things with Murray, again, that you miss so much time, you worry about things like rolled ankles. And he's had a tendency to roll ankles, to be honest, in his career. He's had a lot of them. But the injury that you're talking about where he missed like 9 games, Denver was being extra cautious with him because he had earlier in the year a hamstring thing, and then he had the shin splint thing that turned into a knee thing. So I think that Denver, by the way, was rolling like out of the All-Star break. I don't remember what they started, but it was like 13-1 or 13-2 or something. They looked the best they did all season in the like 15 games immediately after the All-Star break. It looked like that was the lock-in, let's see how good we are portion. And then when Murray had that injury, that I think is probably one that if it were a playoffs would have been like a 2-day injury. They extended it into basically a 9-game injury, I think, as all we need is this team to be healthy at the playoffs. So let's just not let him play through 70% or what have you.
Yeah, I just love Murray's game and I love his attitude. Like the way he goes about the stuff in the playoffs is just so much fun to watch when he isn't kicking the Lakers' ass. But like,
do you know my take on that? And people will hate this. I honestly see more Kobe in him than all but a handful of players in the NBA. Like maybe Kawhi Leonard stylistically, you see this or that. But I actually think Murray, because his name is Murray and it sounds like Curry, and we compare every guard to to Steph Curry. I think there's a natural thought there. He has more of a mid-range game. He has a great post-up game. He's all about footwork. You'll notice
he's physical
a lot
as hell too. Like
you'll notice
loves,
a lot more
like,
Kobe in his game. Yeah. He just has a lot of it. And obviously that was his idol. So he went to the Mamba Academy in that period of time and stuff. So Kobe's his guy, and you can tell that in his game.
I got this comment here. It's kind of like made me laugh a little bit. Joe Little says, this is actually super insightful. Like the sense of like surprise, like, oh, actually, look at that.
That's funny. Thank you. Thank you, Joe. I'm glad you're enjoying the conversation.
But yeah, I that's fair to say that like I asked it in kind of a weird way, but like I was talking with Aaron yesterday about this matchup. And I think if you go through the history of basketball, if a team had the two best players in a series, that it's usually a short series, right? And whether you want to put LeBron there or whatever, I think it's close between LeBron and Jamal, and that's all that really matters, right? If it's in that realm there. But I think it's a good point to mention how much of Murray playing well has to do with Jokic, and Jokic is such a floor raiser that, you know, it kind of helps from Jamal Murray playing quote unquote poorly. Talking about Jokic here, this is the thing that like I have, this is a Lakers show, right? I write for Lakers Daily. I am I have LA in my name, right? So I'm like going through with a fine tooth comb to try to find any advantage that I can find here to have more confidence in the Lakers, right?
They're there.
But at the end of the day, it's still Jokic. Like it's not just that he's the best player in the world, but it's the way that he's the best player in the world. It's the fact that like it doesn't matter what the Lakers do defensively. If it holds him up for a second, it's only going to be for a second in grand terms. And this is the part that I don't think Lakers fans can quite grasp because of the way that he is covered, right? The way that he looks and the way that he even plays. But like, how special has Jokic been this year?
I mean, I would say casually special as part of it. And this is the thing about for us Nuggets fans, this is our first title defense year. You always hear the term the championship hangover, even for a fan base. This is the first year I've experienced that, where the highs of the playoff basketball and the championship are so high that, and the stakes so high and the reward so high that when you go to a regular season game, you're like, man, this is not really doing it for me. You know, I'm not getting that hit.
Yeah.
Jokic's year reflected that, in that he was absolutely dominant in the most casual way, where just every night you were kind of like, oh yeah, there it is again. He just dominated the matchup and controlled every single possession and got it where it went. Here's the thing about Denver. Jokic and Murray, and I think that this was true. I think the bubble really was their last challenge. Like Jokic in particular got humbled in that series by Dwight Howard and Anthony Davis's defense. And we've said this about Jok since 2016. He seems to get reads on players. Like you play against a guy four or five times, the next thing you know, he's got it figured out. He's like, oh, this is what that guy can't do. And he ends up molding his game around the other player's weaknesses. I honestly think, and look, I could be wrong on this. It's sports. Anything can happen. I honestly think he solved Anthony Davis. And Anthony Davis is probably the best defender in the NBA for big men, at least in terms of versatility.